Good afternoon. So, oh well, that was good. So last time we talked about accessing devices. We mentioned this sort of Unix idea for how we talk to devices, which we don't have separate system calls for talking to devices. Instead, devices look like files. We have this one file interface, and devices are device files you open and you can read and write. So like you can open a file just like you'd open a text file. And when you write to it, rather than storing text, you can play audio, for example. Or you can open a file, and rather than reading whatever data is in there, you can read it to get key presses or mouse movements. And we said, OK, so these are going to be implemented by some part of the kernel that's handling these system calls and also handling the exceptions that devices trigger. We called this part of the kernel the device driver. And we said that there are two pieces to a typical device driver. We had a typical top half where we handled the read and write operations themselves. And typically the primary things these would do is that we'd have some sort of kernel buffer of data that had been read from the device into the kernel, but not from the kernel into an application, or data which had been copied into the kernel from an application but not sent to the device yet. And these read and write implementations would manipulate that buffer. And sometimes they might need to talk to the device, like to set things up for the other part of the device driver. And the other part of the device driver we called the bottom half, and this is the part which handles exceptions from the device. So our keyboard triggers an exception when there's keys to read. Sort of a network device is going to trigger an exception when it's ready to accept more things to send over the network, or when it has stuff on the network that it received that the operating system should handle. And in this handler, we're going to have to respond to that event, sort of deal with there being input or output being ready. And if the device doesn't do direct memory access, then we're going to have to copy to the device. If the device does direct memory access, instead, we're going to tell the device, hey, the data is in this location in memory, and the device is going to handle accessing that memory to copy back, to the device for writing or from the device for reading. Some questions about things we covered last time? So our topic for today, we're going to look at sort of a particular kind of devices, and this is going to be with file systems. And file systems deal with disks, so this sort of things which store permanent data. I'm talking about both hard drives, spinning disks, because they actually are spinning internally, and solid state disks. And these all provide sort of a similar interface. And there's some details we're not going to talk about because they aren't so important, but the key thing we want to say is that we can ask the disk controller to read or write things, and when we do that, we ask with sector numbers. Oh, and I should have a... where a sector is a sort of is a chunk of data on the disk. And we can ask to read and write them. And typically, they'll use direct memory access. So we'll make a request, read or write to this part of the disk from this part of memory, or to this part of memory. And we identify the parts of the disk with these sector numbers. And typically, close sector numbers are close physically. Also, disk controllers generally can have a queue of pending requests. So we don't just have to like read and write one thing at a time. We can say, here are a bunch of things to read and a bunch of places to put where you read them. Here are a bunch of things to write. Here's where they get the data to write. And the OS can specify some ordering constraints on that, which is sometimes important. So we're going to talk about building file systems. And we have these chunks of data, and that's what we can read or write from the disk. And that's going to be important. We can't read or write individual bytes to disks. That's just not supported by the hardware. So if you write one byte to a file, like we cannot do that in the hardware. We have to write a bigger amount of data to store that on a disk. So we're going to look at file systems, which are about how we lay out data on these disks, how we decide how to divide it up into files and directories. Given that we have this thing which can store these sectors, these chunks of data, that are numbered. And we're going to start by talking about the FAT file system. So FAT stands for file allocation table. And I'm going to start by talking about it. Well, we're using an assignment, and it's probably the simplest widely used file system. So pretty much everything else is at least a little more complicated. And it's very old, that's why it's simple. And so we're going to deal with that. So FAT divides the disk into what it calls clusters. And I just talked about sectors. You might say, okay, so we read and write the disk in sectors. Those must be the clusters. And the answer is not quite. So the sector is the amount the hardware is willing to read or write at a time. And that's determined by the physical disk. And historically, this was almost always half a kilobyte, often on modern disks. It's a bigger amount of space. Clusters is a size defined by the file system. And FAT has said, well, sometimes the amount the hardware is willing to read or write is not the amount I want to read or write at a time. And so sometimes clusters will be multiple sectors. In fact, that's pretty common, because 512 bytes is pretty small. You have a disk of that size, you'd really rather deal with bigger chunks, and FAT supports that. So clusters is the chunk FAT's going to deal with, and reading and writing a cluster might involve reading and writing multiple sectors on the disk, just because they have different sizes. Questions about clusters and sectors? Okay. So we've divided up the disk into clusters, and we're going to number these clusters. Here, I'm showing them numbered starting at 0. I should mention that this is not actually how FAT numbers them. I'm just doing that for illustration purposes. FAT has a different way of numbering them, which will come up in the assignment. But they're numbered. So once we've numbered the clusters, we need to store the data for a file. And we're going to store the data for a file in a list of clusters. So for example, if I have example.txt, that takes up more than 3 clusters of space, I could say decide to put it in clusters 10, 13, 14, and 15. And so I'll have some part of the file's data in cluster 10, another part in cluster 13, 14, and 15. And probably the file isn't going to be a whole number of clusters big. It's like going to be 3.5 clusters. And our clusters are like a kilobyte. Our file might be like 3,600 bytes. We're still going to allocate 4 clusters for that, even though one of them we're not going to use entirely. And because we've decided that files occupy some list of clusters, we're not going to have it be the case that we put half of one file in one cluster and half of one file in the other, just to keep things simple. So now that we know files are kept in a list of clusters, to read a file, we need some place to look up what this list of clusters to access is. And the solution that FAT has chosen for this is that they're going to use a linked list. So there's going to be a linked list telling us this list of clusters. And they store this linked list in something called the file allocation table. So with a normal linked list, we have like next pointers that are like pointers. But we can't really have pointers on disk because we don't have memory addresses. So our pointers are just going to be other cluster numbers. And so the file allocation table is going to have a value for every cluster. So we'll have an entry for every cluster. And the value will be our next pointer for our linked list. So as an example, we have our file at clusters 10, 13, 14, and 15. The way we might fill in the relevant parts of the fat R is we might say the cluster after cluster 10 is 14, the cluster after cluster 14 is 15, the cluster after cluster 15 is 13, and 13, we have some special number we put there to indicate it's the end of the list. So this is a linked list. We have these things are in this array are our next pointers. We have a next pointer for every single cluster. And they're just stored in a big array indexed by the index of that cluster. And so with this scheme, now if I know the file starts at cluster 10, if I have sort of our head of the linked list for this file, I can find all the file's data. Oh, I forgot to edit this. So, and we have some sort of special value for null to indicate an end, just like a normal linked list. So questions? How will our next pointers work? Okay. So, yes?
Is there a special value that allows you to directly access the head?
Question, can I directly get to the head pointer here without doing it? So this is going to be an array. We have to store this array somewhere. So. Is that what you're asking? Like, where is this array stored? And it's going to be stored on disk. So what we'll do is we're going to reserve some part of the disk to store this array. So it's going to be stored, in this example, it takes up three clusters. So these three clusters contain that array. And if we want to get a particular index, we just know that's a certain number of bytes into here, so we can compute what sector to read to find that entry. Yes?
How do we find out where these lists?
Question, how do we find out where, this file location table is? How do I know it's at 2 and not somewhere else, right? Is that your question?
No, my question was, if I wanted to look up the list for some file, how would I know where to start looking?
Oh, okay. So how do I know the starting location? So like I've told you, if we know the head, we have the file, how do we get that? We'll get to that later. It's going to have to do with directories.
With what?
Directories.
Okay.
But we're storing our linked list here, and this linked list, so this is our next pointer, so we can have sort of multiple file status. So we have some file which starts at cluster 7 here, which is just stored in order. We have the file I showed you before, where the first part of the file is not contiguous with the rest. That's fine too. Our linked list tells us the order and what blocks are used. And so the process of reading a file is we somehow get its start location. We'll talk about how to do that later. We read the starting cluster. We check the fat to get the next cluster. And assuming it's valid, it's not the marker for end of file, we read that next cluster, check the fat to get the following cluster, and we keep going until we get the end marker. Yes?
Why would there ever be an advantage to having non-contiguous files?
So the question is, why would I have a file like the one I'm showing here, which is not contiguous? And the big reason why is, let's say I want to put a new file on this disk now. And let's say, I'm going to have to put it somewhere, and I would really like to be able to use this block if it's free. And I really like to do that, even if I'm writing a file that doesn't fit in one cluster. And so having this mechanism that allows the files not to be contiguous lets us do that. And probably the most common way we'll have files on disk which aren't contiguous is just that when we were writing the file, there was space I could use that didn't have enough space for the whole file, so I used part of that space and used some space somewhere else. Does that answer your question? Yes?
So, on the diagram, cluster 10, 14, 15, and 13, they all store data for whatever file they're trying to read, correct?
So, question on the data, cluster 10, 14, 13, and also 15 all store data for this file.
Okay.
For this one file, just different parts of the file. So the first part of the file is in cluster 10, the next part of the file is in cluster 14, and so on. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
How do we know not to write over the table?
Question, how do we know not to write over the table? So we're going to make sure that if there is any part of the table that corresponds to, you know, that corresponds to itself, we're going to have them marked in a way where we won't use them in the table. Other questions? Okay. So, we have a question about how do I get the start location? And, you know, one thing we could say is that the way you're going to access files is that if you want to store a file, you name a cluster number, and that's the name of the file. But most of us don't like naming files that way. So we want to have actual file names, and we're going to store those in directories. And in fact, directories are files, but rather than their data being like text or you know, program data or something like that, they are a list of names, starting cluster numbers, and some other data about the file. So how might this work? So we might have a directory. A directory is, again, a file. Just like a file, it can take up multiple clusters. And the directory is this list of file names. So it says, oh, in this directory, there's a file called index.html. Its starting cluster is cluster 10, and it also takes up this number of bytes. And so using this directory entry here, I can read index.html in this directory by going to cluster 10, then going to the fat to find where's the next pointer for cluster 10, and I get the whole file that way. So I'll take this entry, go to cluster 10, I'll find out, oh, there's a list of clusters that are occupied by it. Let's say it happens to be 10, 11, 15, and 16, and the actual data for that file will be there. And also I mentioned that sometimes we won't use a whole cluster, so in this case, the directory entry says the file is 12,700 bytes or so, which means that, you know, if we have 4 kilobyte clusters, we won't use all of the last cluster, and that's fine. So questions sort of about using this directory entry? Yes?
How can we map from the first directory to a second directory?
So how can we, so the question is what happens when we have a directory in another directory? How can we move from pointer zero? Oh, from how do I? So I said that this directory takes up 2 clusters on the disk. How do I get from the first cluster to the second? I use the next pointer in the fat. So just like the data for a directory is stored just like the data for a file. So we get the list of clusters in the exact same way. It just happens that the data for a directory is this list of names and cluster numbers and information about files rather than something the program is trying to store directly. Does that answer your question? Yes?
What was the last sector for index.html to the next cluster?
Question, would the last cluster of index.html point to a next cluster? So it will have this special value, this special end value in it.
Is that for the end of like each cluster, or is that for the last cluster?
So question, what is, does this end value for the end of a cluster or just for the last cluster? So in the fat, this is all about what's next. So it's for, it says there's no next cluster, it's for the last cluster. So the contents of the fat aren't going to reflect whether the whole cluster is used or not. For that information, we have to look at the directory entry to see if the last cluster is completely used or only partially used. Yes? So the question is, if I'm reading from a file over multiple clusters, it sounds like I have to read the cluster, then go to the fat, then read another cluster, and so on. Yes. Now, of course, we could speed this up by, say, caching things. We could, like, load a copy of the fat into memory so we aren't, like, actually reading from different places on disk all the time. Does that answer your question? Yes. Can I have multiple files in the same cluster? No. FAT is not going to allow that. So conceptually, it might make sense to have, like, if we have two copies of the same file, to have them pointing to the same cluster. This is something FAT does not support. And that things, if you like remove that file, FAT's going to get confused. But there are file systems which support that, but we have to do extra bookkeeping to make sure that if we like remove a file that's pointed to twice, that we handle that. Yes. Yeah?
Why does the file doesn't start at multiple lifetime bytes?
This question, why does the file
start 4, 3, 12 bytes instead of like multiple 5?
Question, why is this size here a multiple, why is this 4,096 bytes per cluster? I chose a size.
So like the 4, 3, 12 bytes.
Question, why is 4, 3, 12 not a multiple of 5, 12? So just like, so files can have, are gonna be written in bytes, so they can have any number of bytes as their size. And the way we're gonna handle that is that we're gonna write, of course, more than that, but we're just gonna ignore the end.
But why doesn't this start at the beginning of the cluster, since it'll have only one file per cluster?
Question, why doesn't it start at the beginning of a cluster? So the file assignments .html is in cluster 17. So that's going to be here. Does that make sense? The file we know from the directory entry is 4,300 bytes, which is less than, so which is going to mean that's going to have a second cluster somewhere. Because that's more than our cluster size, which seems to be based on the example from index.html cluster. So it's going to have some other cluster that this points to. And that's going to contain the rest of the data for the file. But in this cluster, only a little bit of it's going to be used. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I thought that was offset.
This is the question is about the byte numbers. The byte numbers are not offsets, they're the total size. Yeah?
Where do we know the start of the stack?
Where do we know the start of the... Question, how can we keep track of where the index is? By index, do you mean these directory entries?
The directory.
So we're going to have some way of finding the first directory we want to look at, called the root directory. And there's going to be some information on the disk in a special location, which we'll talk about later for that. What's the size of a cluster in FAT? So it varies. It is configurable. So I'm using 4 kilobyte clusters in my example, but it's configurable. So it could be, any multiple of the sector size. Or not any, but like between like the sector size and like 8 or 16 times the sector size. Yeah.
Does the size of cluster determine like how many files one
Question, does the size of a cluster determine how many files one directory can contain? So, no. So our directories can be stored in multiple clusters. So in this example, I said, we have two different clusters that store directory entries. And I can make my directory as big as I want. I just need to add more links to my linked list of clusters for the directory. So the restriction on how many files I can have in a directory, it's just how many clusters can I put in the directory and how many directory entries fit in there. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay. So we talked about directory entries, and I sort of gave this abstract format. So the actual way directory entries are stored is maybe a little uglier. So here's the format written out as bytes. And there's some history going on here. So FAT is a very old file system. So natively, and for the assignment, it only cares about supporting an 8-character file name with a 3-character extension. You might say, wait a moment, I've used FAT with more than that. Well, there's something added on that sort of works added on to this to support that. That's not part of the assignment, and I'm not going to explain here, but we're going to point to the documentation for it if you want to know how it works. But basically, they made a mistake and didn't make file names very big, and they kind of papered over it. But for the assignment, we're not going to care about that. We just need to support short file names like this. And what they've decided to do is that we store our pre-extension part of the file name padded by spaces. So in this case, this is readme.txt, and I have two spaces padding it to 8 bytes. And then our extension. Then we have these attributes. So besides knowing sort of the size of a file, we also need to know sort of, is it a directory or not? Is it read-only? Is it hidden? Various other things that FAT supports. And that's going to be store encoded in this attributes byte here. And sort of the most interesting part of this for us is that we can know whether it's a directory or not from this. We also need to store the starting cluster number. And for historical reasons, that's done in two pieces. And it's just the 32-bit number. It's done in two pieces because it used to be the case that FAT only supported 16-bit numbers for this. And then they realized, wait a moment, our hard drives are getting bigger, so we can't just do that. So they added another 16 bits. So that's storing our starting cluster. We also need to store the... We also need to store the file size, which I thought I made an animation slide for, but I guess not. So our file size here, our 342 byte, we're going to have that written in the directory entry here. So that's our file size. Yeah?
Do we have to mark certain entries as end in the file outreach table if we know the file size of each file? Like, can't we just go until we...
Question, why do we need to mark certain entries at end in the file allocation table if we know the file size? So I agree that we could not, so for non-directories, we could not do that. It's going to turn out for directories that this file size is not going to be meaningful, and that we're going to use the end markers for that, just as a historical decision. But otherwise, I agree, yeah, it wouldn't be necessary. Yeah? Question, is the file extension part of the 8-byte name? No. So we have an 8-byte file name and a 3-byte extension. And the first 8 bytes are always before the extension. You can't like have a 9-byte file name if you aren't using the extension. That's not an option. Yeah, and as I say, longer file names are encoded basically using extra directory entries that look invalid to older software. That was the trick they used. So we have our 8 plus 3 file name or attributes. So another thing we do is that we need to have some directory entries which are special. So one thing we need is that directories have an end of directory marker. So we know that if we're in the last cluster of a directory, well, there's no more directory entries to read. And that's done by putting a 0 byte in place of the first character of a file name. So that indicates this is not a real directory entry, this is just marking the end of the directory, so you know you don't have to keep going. And sometimes we need to delete files. And when we delete files, well, we could rewrite the entire directory, but we'd rather just rewrite that single entry. You know, replace that single entry, keep everything else where it is. And to support that, the special value hex E5 is used to mark directory entries that are holes, that there's more directory entries in the directory, but this one is no longer in use. Probably because we had a file there and we deleted it, and I didn't want to move all the file directory entries afterwards elsewhere. Okay. So, okay, we also see we have some time information that's stored in a surprising variety of formats that we're not going to go into because it's not really important. And that's our directory entry. Yeah, I guess the other thing I should mention is that this attributes flag also marks some directory entries that we should normally ignore that hold extra data about files. Okay. So that's our directory entry. And you might say, well, I have sort of the format laid out here. How are we going to access this like from code? And sort of a very common pattern is that we're going to represent what's stored on disk as a struct. So here I have a struct that represents it, and I've very carefully written this struct such that I can copy from the disk into memory and access the fields that are on the disk. And to do this, I need to do some things. So one thing I need to do is I need to tell the compiler, don't add padding to this truck. So normally, the compiler will try to do things like make sure, you know, integers don't cross cache line boundaries and make them aligned. By using this pet attribute here, I told GCC or Clang that please don't do that. I really need this to be laid out exactly as I've written. No exceptions, don't add any empty space. That would make things faster. Because I don't care if it's faster to access in memory, it needs to match what's on disk. And I'm also carefully using types that have a specific size. So uint8t is a type that's 8 bits long, so 1 byte. uint16t is a type that's 16 bits long, and so on. And it happens that FAT uses little endian, and I'm going to assume a little endian system so I don't have to do byte order conversions. If that wasn't true, I would have to handle that too. And this is a struct I supply with the assignment. You might say, where did I get these names from? These horrible, horrible names. These are the names that Microsoft's documentation uses. So I use them because we refer to you to the documentation. And I figure it's probably valuable to match that, even if the names are, you know, probably we could like write out the word create, for example. So questions about our directory entry format. Okay, so commonly when we're accessing files, we're gonna have to deal with multiple directories. So if I have a path like foo/bar/baz file.txt, to access that file, I'm going to need to read some root directory to find foo. So I'm gonna scan through its directory entries until I see the name foo. Then I'm gonna need to read some that foo directory's entries to find bar. Scan through those entries until it matches bar, then scan through bar's entries until it matches baz, and scan through baz's entries until I find file.txt. So we just sort of have this recursive process when we're actually accessing a file. Questions? Yeah?
So would foo be a directory entry which would have corresponding clusters that held like the contents of that directory?
Question, would foo have a directory entry that pointed to cluster numbers that held the contents? Yes, where the contents means the directory entries for it. That's what's in our directories, just directory entries. Okay, other questions? Yeah?
And the directory entry of foo will have information about bar.
Question, is the directory entry for foo will have information about bar? It won't have information about bar directly, but we're going to use the directory entry of foo, like it might, for example, contain the number 9 in this example. And we'd use that number 9 to find the actual directory entries, and we check those for bar. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
So there would be one cluster that actually had like some sort of, I feel like I'm getting confused by the two directory, because
sometimes
it's like a cluster, which is a directory.
So question is, what is a directory? So a file, any file, has some data, and it also has sort of a name and metadata, which are stored in its directory entry. And most directories, well, directories are files. So we have the data, which is the directory entries, which point to subdirectories. And we also have metadata, which is in its directory entry. So if we think of here, foo has a directory entry for foo in the root. And that points to the actual data for foo. And that data for foo has inside it a directory entry for bar. Does that answer your question? So we're going to find our directory entry for foo. It's going to point us to the data for foo. We're going to read that data to find a directory entry for bar inside it. There's the data for bar, and so on. Other questions? Okay, so something we need to start this process is we need to find the first directory. Where's the top of the disk? Where's the main directory of the disk, which we'll call the root directory? So we need to know that. So where are we going to know that? And in fact, we need a bunch of data, and we're going to have something we'll call the file system header. That's going to store information about sort of things that are global locations on the disk. So one thing the header is going to tell us, it's going to tell us how big clusters are. So I mentioned cluster size varies. This is where we configure it. So when I look at a disk, I can look at this, this beginning of the disk and say, oh, my clusters are 4 sectors or 2, and depending on what I see stored there. We also have a number of reserve sectors, and the rule in FAT is that the file allocation table itself starts after those reserve sectors. And I also need to know how big the file allocation table is, and that's stored in the FAT. And that's information we can use to make sure we don't overwrite the file allocation table by accident. And in this case, it says 11 because it's in sectors, not in clusters. And we have the root directory cluster number. So that's how we find the root directory, is that we just have its cluster number in the head in the beginning of the disk, just at a known, well-known location that we check whenever we start using a disk. Okay, so questions? Yes.
So I'm a little confused by what is in the clusters from 0 to 9?
Question, what is in the clusters from 0 to 9? So we don't know. Except we know there's a header here, and we know there's a FAT here, but we don't know what else is here. Now, there's one thing we're going to talk about, but it doesn't need to be the case that the root directory is in any particular place. I could have chosen any cluster number for it. It's just wherever we happen to have the data for that list of files that are in the beginning, in the top of the disk. Does that make sense? So your question is where is the file data is just stored after the root directory? So the file data could be stored before or after the root directory. There's no restriction on that. So the root directory just is where we start looking first, but that doesn't mean there isn't information stored anywhere else in this. So I could have, instead of having the root directory cluster be 10, it could have been 100, and that's still fine. So how we would find the other files would be that we'd have directory entries that could point. So a directory entry, for example, in the root directory, it could point to cluster 9 or cluster 21 is where that file is. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Other questions? Yeah.
So is this file system header stored within the reserve sectors?
Question, is this file system header stored within the reserve sectors? Yes. Is that the only thing in the reserve sectors? Not necessarily, but it's the only thing, I think it's the only thing the file system cares about. But sometimes the beginning of the disk is also used to have some boot code that's not part of the file system, which is why there's reserve sectors and also why there's this sort of OS startup data field. Yes? Question, does the header data change dynamically or is it fixed? So most of it is set when you set up the disk to be used, called formatting the disk. But some of it, the fields, especially some of the ones I didn't show, might change as things happen. And I guess as a concrete example, hypothetically, we could decide to change where the root directory is stored, and that's fine. And we just overwrite the header to do that. Yes?
So no matter what file we're looking for, we always start at the root directory when we're looking for the
FAT? Question, no matter what file we're looking for, we always start at the root directory? Yes.
And then wouldn't that give you the same path every time?
Question, wouldn't that give you the same path every time? So when we start at the root directory, we're looking for a specific name, and the name we're going to look for is going to be different most times. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Why are there two FATs?
Why are there two FATs? I'm going to get to that next. Other question? Okay, so there's this weird number of FATs table field, and commonly we'll have more than one copy of the FAT. So we'll have the real one and a backup. And why would we want to do this? Well, sometimes disks fail, and when they fail, often a way they fail, especially hard drives, probably also sometimes SSDs, is that just a few, some sectors of the disk will fail. And it would be really, really annoying if it happens that just like this part of the disk fails, because then we basically lose the ability to use it, even though most of the data is still there. So it's kind of a mitigation for this. The fat designers always write actually two copies of the file allocation table. So if there's a disk failure, we can still hopefully read the data on the disk, even if most of the data on the disk at least. So that's why there's two copies. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so we have our file system header, and like the directory entries, we can represent this as a struct that I can just copy into. So we have sort of our bytes per sector, sectors per cluster. We have our reserve sector count, the space before the file allocation table. We have the number of fats and information about which ones are in use, and a bunch of other sort of information that's global to the entire disk. And also somewhere in there, the root directory cluster. So this tells us what we need to know about finding files and reading them. But there's some other operations you might want to do in a file system. One of them is creating files. So to create a file, we need to add a directory entry for it. And for the most part, we know how to do that. We just hope there's more space in a directory cluster. If there's not, well, that's a problem. And we just write a new directory entry in there. But we need to make that point to data somewhere. So where can we put the file? And we also need to update the fat to like set up that linked list, to set up those next pointers. But how do we choose where to put the data, the file? So to do this, we need to know what parts of the disk aren't being used right now that I can allocate. And the mechanism fat uses for this is in the file allocation table, we'll have a special value for clusters that aren't being used, because we don't need their next pointer. So we'll just mark them with a special value indicating this cluster is free. Okay, so questions about that? And so when we allocate space, we'll do something. We'll say choose, say, clusters 21, 22, and 24. So we'll mark them as not free, and we'll fill them in with our new, you know, next pointer. So after 21 is 22, after 22 is 24, after 24 is nothing. So we'll modify that part of the file allocation table to reflect the new file we're about to write, which is, in this case, going to take up three clusters. Questions? Idea. So this is how we're going to allocate space for a file. And we also are going to need to put in a directory entry. So let's say I know the directory has some data stored here. If there's an unused entry in there, so if there's empty space, you know, there's extra space that's not being used for directory entries, or one of those entries that's marked as, you know, was deleted, I can just replace that with my new file. Say I have new.txt, it's cluster, you know, starts at cluster 21, has some size, can fill in all that data in the directory entry, and now I've created the file. So questions on our file creation process so far? So there's one case I have to handle, which is I assumed I had some unused entry I could replace. Sometimes that's not going to be true. Sometimes the directory's full. At least it's full in the sense that all the clusters are completely occupied. So in that case, I'm going to need to allocate a new cluster for it. So I'm going to do that the same kind of way I allocated the file cluster. So I'm going to find a free cluster. I'm going to update those to the next pointers for to point to it, and also of the cluster I allocated to say it's the end. And I'm going to put in that new cluster my new directory entry, and also, you know, indicate that there's, you know, no more directory entries. in your step. Yes?
Could you actually make the file allocation table? You add a cluster to the file allocation table?
Question, I mean add a cluster to the file allocation table. I edit the file allocation table for the first cluster to set up this pointer here, right? This is a pointer in the file allocation table. Right, that points from the first cluster of the directory to the second. Does that answer your question?
I think I just need to look at it more.
Okay, but so if you remember when we talked about just sort of generally here, right, we need to have for the directory previously, like we just had 10, and I'm like adding 14 to it, so I'm going to need to set my new pointer to make that work. So in the worst, so sometimes I'm going to need to make the directory bigger. To make the directory bigger, I find a new cluster, update thing, fit the fat to point to it, and also update the fat to indicate that it's the last cluster of the directory now. Okay, so questions? Yeah.
So is the file allocation tables like how? I guess, so when you put the new directory, you look up in the file allocation table where directory one is, and then would you have to go back to the file allocation table to get where the second part of that is?
So question is, so for a directory, so you had this idea that for looking up a directory, I go to the file allocation table?
Yeah.
So when I'm told about a directory, I'm going to know where its first cluster of data is. What I'm going to go to the file allocation table for is to find out, is there more?
Okay.
So it's either going to tell me, nope, that's all of it, or that there's more. So that's why I'm going to go to the file allocation table. I need to update it whenever I'm updating, is there another cluster after this one for any cluster? Yes?
So the file allocation table at startup, I thought that the file allocation table contains an entry for every single cluster, and then that cluster isn't part of one of the linked lists, then you just have a special marker. So why would you need to update the file allocation table to add a new cluster?
Question, why would I update the file allocation to add a new cluster? So by add a new cluster, I mean, to add a cluster to a directory or a file. Right, so I'm not adding a new entry, I'm updating the entry to, instead of saying it's free, to say it's part of a file or directory.
And you'd remove the end pointer from the end of the list and then put on that new entry and make the old end point to the new end?
So the question is, I remove the end pointer from the list and make a new point to new end? Yeah, so for example, let's say here I wanted to extend whatever file was ending at here. I would just sort of take this end pointer and say make it point to 19, and make 19 into an end pointer. Other questions? Yeah, and if I said adding an entry, I meant editing an entry to the fat, because yes, it is fixed at format time. Yes?
So when we allocate a new cluster for the directory's data, we would need to update the fat entry for the directory, right?
So question, when we allocate a new cluster for the directory's data, we need to update the fat entry for the directory. So let's be careful here. So directories and files don't have fat entries. Their clusters do. So we would need to update the fat entry for one of the clusters of the directory to indicate that there's another cluster after it. Does that answer your question? So the fat entries are all about clusters. They're not about files or directories. The information about files and directories is in directory entries. That points to a cluster, but that's not what the fat is about. Yes?
If you added a new cluster to the linked list of some that is associated with some directory.
Question, when I point to a specific cluster, it becomes associated with some directory or file? Yes.
But you wouldn't need to change the
But the question is, but the fat doesn't, does the fat indicate that? No. The way we find that out is from the directory entries that point to those clusters.
But doesn't the directory entry just hold the pointer to the starting cluster?
Question, doesn't the directory entry just hold the pointer to the starting cluster? Yes. But the FAT entries say nothing about sort of what the files are. They just say, here's some data, and here's the next data. Yes? Does the directory also store the location of the...
Of itself?
No. A directory will only store the location of subdirectories or files of type.
And no parents?
Question, does it store its parents? Oh, okay. I guess we didn't show this here, but there is a pointer to indicate what the parent directory it is. It's not actually necessary because we could have just remembered how we got to this directory. But FAT does store that for convenience, but we don't actually need it. And commonly, OSs might not actually even use it. Yes? Question, does a directory data have a pointer to its child directory data? Yes, because if we have a directory entry, so if set it for foo.txt, this is for like a subdirectory, then the child's directory's data is in cluster 11, and that data is new other directory entries. Does that answer your question? Okay. So now that we've talked about how FAT works, we have a bunch, so I have, let's say here, I have a directory A that contains a directory B that contains c.txt. So that's sort of my layout on disk. And when I say FAT, oh, I should be more careful for A's clusters. I should be careful about avoiding confusion here. So we have FAT entries for the clusters of A. So A has directory entries. There's FAT entries to tell how those are linked together. For B, there are FAT entries to tell how those are linked together. For B's clusters, which store directory entries, including the entry for C, and C has some data clusters that are linked together using the FAT. So we have the FAT entries, that's our linked list part for the clusters, and we have the actual clusters themselves. And my question is, what's modified for each of these? So let's start with the first thing here. Let's say, assume c.txt doesn't exist yet. Let's say you're creating c.txt. Which of these would be modified? Potentially modified. So not, some of them might not always be modified. And let's ignore timestamp updates, because yes, I know we actually update a whole bunch of timestamps somewhere, but that's... Let's ignore that and just care about updates needed to make data work, about finding the data work.
Oh, oops.
stored in these clusters? It's the, like, you just store everything, like,
okay, who'd like some? Who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's start with the easy one. So, who thinks that we need to modify item C, the fat entries for C.txt, for TSX clusters? Wait, I should have written out clusters to be extra clear. Okay, so most people, how about the data clusters for C.txt? Thinks we need to modify those. So yeah, probably creating a file, we need to write its data somewhere. We need to write that, you know, if its data takes up, say, two clusters. So let's say we have our data for C. So we have two clusters of data for C. So I need to write those two clusters. And I also need to set up the pointers for those clusters. So I'm going to need to set up a pointer from, let's say, if there's two clusters we're creating in our new file, I need to set up a pointer from one to the other. And also I need to have a pointer from the last cluster to indicate that it's the, you know, end of the file. So you have my null pointer on my linked list. And those are the fat entries for C. So this is going to be yes, C and F here. Those are the simplest ones. We better modify them to create the file, assuming the file starts with data. We're gonna have to at least put a null pointer for our next, you know, the end marker in the fat entry for one of those clusters, in addition to writing the data to a cluster. Okay, how about who thinks we're gonna modify E, the data clusters for B? Okay, so you have pretty good consensus. Okay, so I represent here our data clusters for B are these here. And in them, we're going to have the pointer to the beginning of C and the name C. So we are indeed going to modify that. So yeah, we're going to need to modify that to add the pointer to that first cluster of C.txt. Okay. How about the fat entries for B's clusters? Who thinks we may need to modify them? Who thinks we shouldn't need to modify them? Okay. So we have, most people say we may need to. And so we have two cases here. So one case is like here, we already had a cluster for B, and we just put C in the middle of it. Another case is that everything was full, and I needed to go on and put C, add a new cluster, and put C's pointer in there. So this alternate case is that, you know, I was out of room in B's clusters already, so I needed to make a new cluster for B, and therefore I needed to update some pointers. I needed to update the pointer that pointed to that new cluster I put C in, so the C's directory entry, I should say, in. And I also needed to update its end pointer to indicate that's the last cluster of the directory. Yes?
If you take C.txt and we need to give it, does the directory entry for C.txt that we need to place into these data clusters take up an entire cluster?
Question, how big is the directory entry in for C.txt going to be? So directory entries in FAT are 32 bytes, which is less than a cluster. So it doesn't take up a full cluster, but it could be the case that all our current clusters are already full with directory entries. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Yeah?
Isn't the directory entry 33 bytes according to graph at page 14?
Question, isn't the directory entry 33 bytes based on what I showed here? This is 8 plus 3 is 11, 12, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 28, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31. I apparently made an error on this diagram, and I'm not sure where. Probably here. Sorry about that. but it should be 32 bytes. So I will correct that. Okay, so we have some parts of the file left over after this. So how about, so we know that we're gonna have E, and also we're gonna have B modified, maybe. Like B is not always gonna be modified, but it is. How about A, the fat entries for A's clusters? Okay, here's how about D, the data clusters for A. Okay, I would concur with that because A already has a valid pointer to B, and that's all we need to make C.txt work. There's no reason to change that, so there's nothing to change there. Okay, so how about item two? So let's say C.txt has some, sorry, question first?
We need to update the size for B.
Question, do we need to update the size for B? Okay, that's a good point. So as a special case, fat does not store the sizes of directories in their directory entry. Instead, we just look for an end marker. But indeed, if we were storing the size for B, we might have to update that too, and that would involve updating A. Updating the data clusters for A, because we'd have to update the pointer A has to B, which has that metadata about the size. But it happens for directories that fat just stores as a size of 0 and figures it out from the file allocation table. Yes?
What exactly is stored in the fat table for directories versus files?
Question, what's stored in the fat table for directories versus files? The fat table stores information about clusters. So it just stores, is there a next cluster for this cluster? And clusters can contain directory entries or bytes of files. Does that answer your question?
So if a directory entry spans more than one cluster?
Question, could a directory entry span more than one cluster? Directory entries are sized to 32 bytes, so that doesn't happen. Does that answer your question?
So they're guaranteed to fit within a cluster?
Question, they're guaranteed to fit within a cluster? They're sized so that they will fit it within a cluster, yes. Yeah. So the question is, even though it seems like B's directory entry should contain the size information, we don't have to update it? Yeah, so this is a special case. So here, we have our directory entry for B in the cluster data clusters for A, and the size here is not used. So if the size were used, we would have to update it, but as a special case, fat doesn't use that size. But if the size were used, yes, this would be a problem, and we would have to update it in some cases. Does that answer your question?
So the size is only used for the non-directory files?
Question, the size is only used for non-directory files? Yes. Other questions? Yeah.
What code is deciding, like, you mentioned the special case that if the data cluster for B is full, then you might need to allocate a new one or replace the directory entry for C. But, like, what code is making that decision?
Question, what code decides whether we allocate a new cluster for B or not? And, well, the OS code gets to decide how to do that. So we could write code which always does that, even though it wastes space. Probably we don't want to do that. Probably we're going to write code which does something like, you know, scans through the directories and entries and see if there's space, and if not, does that. Does that answer your question? Other questions? So let's go to item two here. So let's say C.txt has some data in it, and I want to truncate it to make it 0 bytes. What should change as a result of that? Or might change as a result of that?
Thank you. then it would be all sorts of things that I've been attacking first because it's starting.
Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, who thinks option A, the fat entries for A's clusters change, may change? Okay, no one? How about option B, the fat entry for B's clusters? Few people? Option C, the fat entry for C.txt clusters? Okay, most people? Option D, the data clusters for A. Option E, the data clusters for B. Okay, we got kind of a mix. And F, the data clusters for C. Okay, so we have pretty good consensus that the fat entries for C change, and I agree. So what we're gonna do is the fat entries for C are currently storing like these pointers here from, you know, to the next cluster. And we need to instead have them have that special value which indicates they're free. So that's gonna be update the data, sort of update, you know, fat to say free. And it seemed like a lot of people think that we're going to need to modify the data clusters for C.txt themselves while we're freeing up the file. So that is something we could do that's not unreasonable, but we don't need to. We can just mark them as free in the fat and rely on them being overwritten later if we use them for something else. And that's typically what operating systems will do. It's not crazy to overwrite them right away, but there's no reason to. So I would say that we're definitely modifying C. We probably aren't modifying F. And sort of the next thing most popular is the data clusters for B. We kind of had a mix on there. So remember that this is a regular file. So we have a directory entry that has a size, and we better change that size. So we're going to need to update the data clusters for B where the pointer to C is along with this size. And we also might want to update the cluster number it points to if we think that we can have a zero length file by having cluster number by just not using the cluster number. But most importantly, we definitely need to update that size. Yes. So question for a directory, we don't use the size? Yes.
Okay. And then if C.txt is 0, like, would we even have a data cluster for it?
Question, if C.txt is 0 bytes, would we even have a data cluster? We don't have to. Okay, so let's do different exercise in our last 5 minutes. Yes. Oh, the answer here was C and E for 2. We don't need to do F because we can just mark them as free without, and they'll be overwritten later anyways. Yes?
If we said we make the size of C.txt 0 bytes, would that mean that we would, like, would we even need to hold a directory entry for C in these data clusters?
Question, if C.txt is 0 bytes, do we still need a directory entry? Yes. Otherwise, when you, like, type ls, there wouldn't be anything to list.
What would you list if C is 0 bytes?
What happens when you open up a text editor and make an empty file? Yeah, you can do that, so you need to support it. Other questions? Okay. So let's do this first exercise here. So let's say I have a fat file system, I have 4-byte fat entries, 32-byte directory entries, and I'm asking how many clusters outside the fat, like ignore the space used to store the fat entries, if we have a directory of 230 kilobyte files. And by kilobyte, I mean, 1024 bits. Someone want to tell me, how would you start doing this question? Yeah. Okay, so how many clusters to hold the files? So clusters for the files. So each of these files, the non-directory file seems the same. And it's 30 kilobytes per file. Kilobytes divided by 2 kilobytes per cluster. So that seems to mean we need 15 clusters for each one. So 15 times 200 clusters for the file. And then we need space for the directory. So how do we figure out how much space we need for the directory? Anyone? Preferably, yes, I'm correct.
So after figuring out like the number, total number of clusters, we can maybe like multiply by the size of the directory entries?
So we have the size of the directory entries. We're going to need that. So we have 32 bytes. And you wanted to go for the total number of clusters. And so you're thinking, oh, the directory needs to point to each of these clusters. But remember, we only point directly to the first cluster of each of the files.
So it's like multiplied by 200?
Yeah, so we have 200 directory entries we need. So that's 32 bytes times 200. And that's going to get us, if we do that math, 6,400 bytes. So how do we translate that to clusters? So we divide by the size of a cluster. And so I do that, and I get 3.125. So what should I do with that?
We still need like four clusters.
So we have 3.125 clusters, but we can't use a quarter of a cluster. We have to use the whole thing. So we're going to use four clusters for the directory. It's just that most of one of those clusters is not going to be very useful. So we have four clusters for the directory. So my total answer here is my 15 for each of the files times 200 files plus four clusters for the directory. So that's the number of clusters I'm using. And I have to set the FAT entries for each of those clusters to either point to a next cluster or point to null. So that many clusters and that many FAT entries. So questions about how I figure this out? Okay, and we have a similar problem here, which we don't have time for, but asking about 2,003 kilobyte files. A notable thing is just like with the directory where we had three and a little extra clusters of data, of directory entries that is, we need four clusters for these files. We have 1.5 clusters of data. How many clusters do we use to store that?
Two
for each file, even though, yes, we're wasting half a cluster times 2,000 files. Too bad. Okay, so that's where we'll finish up today. So next time we'll talk about the type of file systems that XV6 uses and how they differ from FAT, and some other things that might be better than FAT that we could do in file systems.